money down. And if you have a great site for solar, you might even save money right away on a monthly basis. So don't wait to switch. You'll see your investment pay off the sooner you switch to All Energy Solar. So start saving today and visit allenergysolar.com.
Hey, I guess we found a new name for our show.
Really? What's the new name?
Pilots Progressive Party.
How did you ever come up with that?
Pilots our name and progressive fun is our game.
Well, what's that about?
It's a one-hour news show with progressive guests and information you normally don't hear on the radio.
Well, that's so exciting. I have a few ideas for guests myself.
I know they'll be progressive.
Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on AM 950.
The Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950. Our station has worked with Barbara from WYSIWYG Web Design for years on everything from logo to print design, and especially for developing our website. She does great work and is great to work with, listening to what our goals and design ideas were while offering new, innovative ideas to create the website we are proud of today. Barbara made sure she understood our station, our goals, and our mission before she started working on our site, and made suggestions to help control the cost. Plus, she's friendly, which set us at ease. I recommend Barbara at WYSIWYG Web Design because I know she will deliver an attractive, professional website within the budget you have. She is a local independent business that specializes in helping other local businesses achieve their website and design goals. She can work with nearly any budget and create anything from simple sites to robust custom functionality. To find out more about the company AM950 Trust, go to WYSIWYGWebDesign.com. Spelled out just like it sounds, WYSIWYGWebDesign.com.
With your AM950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today will be mostly sunny with a high of 26, and tonight, a low around 15. Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 42 and a low of 30. Sunday, partly sunny with a high of 45 and a low of 30. Monday will be cloudy with a high of 36 and a low of 22.
EatLocalMinnesota.com's restaurant of the week is Cafe Latte. Cafe Latte is a gourmet cafeteria with an ever-changing selection of award-winning salads, sandwiches, and soups. Plus, their bakery specializes in fresh breads and desserts. Check them out at the intersection of Victoria and Grand in St. Paul.
Listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, joined along by Eric Nelson, as we're in yet another day of the market crashing because of the coronavirus. Eric, how's it going for you in there today? Hopefully better than Wall Street investors.
Yeah, going all right. I don't have corona yet, to my knowledge.
Yet. Yeah. That's always the key part, is yet, when you're talking about the coronavirus, well, with the way folks are talking about it.
It has like a 2-week incubation period. Where you're still contagious, so who knows? We might all have it.
Oh, yeah. So
they've only tested like 400 people.
Yeah, I heard it was like 2 to 6 weeks to recover from the thing, which is just nuts. But then they have that incubation period, too, that you're referring
to.
Yeah,
where you can still get other people sick with it before you even show symptoms.
Oh, that's really fun. Oh, that's a lot to look forward to coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So on the stock market, the Dow Jones is down by about another 700 points. I know I sound like a broken record talking about this, but something to watch for towards the very end of my show. This has happened the past few days where it looks like the market is about to recover some of its losses. Then at the very last minute, like at 2:59 our time, which is just 1 minute before it closes, it absolutely nosedives. So I'd be really concerned that if it's already down 700 points, that we could have like another 800 or 900 point drop just as soon as we hit like 2:59 our time. So that seems to happen, or it's happened the past few days, where
people must be worried that some bad news is going to come out overnight.
Yeah, or they're just procrastinating, hoping things are going to get better, and then they decide, oh, sell as soon as it hits 3:59 Eastern time, 2:59 our time. Yeah, yesterday it looked like we were only going to have like a 200 or 300 point loss. Then all of a sudden, when I heard that top of the hour newscast heading into Matt show, they said 1,100 points. Like, what the hell just happened? So yeah, watch for that towards the end of my show. Once you hear the top of the hour news, especially if you're someone that has a 401k, you might be in for some pretty rough news there once you hear Westwood there at the top of the hour. Speaking of some other coronavirus news, so Already, Cargill is banning all non-essential international travel for its employees in response to the coronavirus. They have around 160,000 employees worldwide. And if you're not that familiar with Cargill, yeah, a lot of their employees do travel all around the globe, so they are pretty much suspending travel for all of their non-essential international travel. What exactly would non-essential international travel be? I'm not quite sure what that definition would be, but anyways.
Recreational golf trips for executives?
Yeah, mate. That very well could. Well, you do make pretty good money if you end up working for Cargill. I will at least say that. And one final thing regarding the coronavirus. I emailed you this, Eric. It's on our call screener. So the CDC has put out guidelines in regards to how you should wear your masks if you're like Eric and me and you happen to have a beard.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
You've seen this before, yeah. I didn't know that apparently there were guidelines for how you're supposed to wear a mask if you have a beard. But they put out this nice little diagram showing about, like, maybe 30 or 35 different styles of beards. And it's funny to go through and look at some of these about how you're supposed to wear your beards. I love the names of some of these. Like, they have the walrus mustache. They also have the English-style mustache, and the way that you're supposed to wear the mask is hilarious because they define an English mustache as being that really long pencil style where it sticks out past your face.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like the Dolly mustache.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just picturing someone wearing a mask with just the little mustache part sticking out. I love the name of one of these as well. They're calling it the toothbrush mustache.
Okay, I know
you can look it up on there. It's a Hitler mustache.
Yeah.
Who exactly is rocking a Hitler mustache nowadays?
Well, funny story, that's why Hitler had that mustache, specifically because he could wear it with gas masks during World War One.
No, that's not true, is it?
I think so. Yeah,
really?
That's why it's skinny.
Oh, World War One. Yeah, that makes sense because he was in the military at that time.
Yeah,
okay.
Not when he was, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking that sounds like some pretty wild stuff. Yeah, if he was doing that just because of what was happening in World War Two. But yeah, you're right. He was a soldier back during World War One. Although, I thought he grew out that mustache a little bit later in his life. Apparently, he must have, back during.
I don't know. I know it was. Yeah. You could wear it with the gas mask.
Yeah. I could be wrong. I always heard he tried to grow it out that way just to distinguish himself. But it would make sense, though, what you're talking about if you have to wear a gas mask, since that was a major part of warfare during World War One. Yeah, maybe that was the reason he ended up doing that. But want to have a little bit of an amusing laugh in light of all the bad news with the coronavirus, you can check this out. Just Google CDC masks and beards, and you'll get a little bit of a look at that diagram. You might be in some trouble in there because I think they're recommending that you have to shave your beard if you're going to wear one of those masks. I think your hair might be too thick to wear one of those suckers.
No, it'll filter out the coronavirus actually better than a mask.
Oh, well, yeah. Just the thicker you grow it, yeah. The thicker you grow it, yeah, maybe the more it'll protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I don't know if I've ever seen you without the beard, so yeah, hopefully you don't have
you
to
have,
get to that
you
point.
You have. I shave it every now and then.
Do you? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So there you go. If you have to have, if you're having a beard or if you have a mustache, you might want to check out those guidelines in case we do get a full-out pandemic here in Minnesota and around the rest of the country. Hey, so coming up on the show today, in the second half, we are going to be speaking with Kevin Featherly, who is the Capitol reporter over at MnLawyer, as we're going to be talking about two reports that were just put out by the Legislative Auditor's Office. Now, on the surface, that thing sounds really boring, the Legislative Auditor's Office. Well, they actually put out two pretty scathing reports in terms of how the Department of Corrections deals with prisoners and also staff workers. And then they put out another report that really criticized the Minnesota Department of Human Rights and a huge backlog they have in cases. So if you've ever filed anything with the Department of Human Rights in Minnesota, chances are your case has never been heard, since there's been all sorts of problems with that agency, according to the Legislative Auditor's Office. We'll chat with Kevin about that in the second half of the show. And then we'll also touch on this Supreme Court case, which just got ruled on after a little over a year of oral arguments. This flew under the radar, but this case really interests me, and I want to run through some of the details on this. So let's pretend you're just an average person that all of a sudden gets arrested for a very serious criminal charge. Let's say something as serious as murder. But you didn't end up actually committing the murder. In fact, you had nothing to do with it whatsoever. But you get arrested, you get thrown in jail, and then you have the sheriff's office and other agencies reporting on your arrest and talking about details of your arrest. Now, of course, the media gets hold of this as well, watching these press conferences, and they report on what happens. Now, keep in mind, you're innocent this entire time. Well, eventually you get released from prison because, obviously, you were innocent of your crime. But the question then becomes, can you actually sue not only the sheriff's office, but also the media for reporting on your false arrest? That was a question that went before the Supreme Court because this is a case that came before them. Well, it actually stems back to a case of 2012 where there was this guy arrested in Cold Spring for murder that he didn't commit. And it was reported all over the news, specifically by Care 11. They ended up getting sued. And now this case went before the Supreme Court trying to determine whether the media can get sued for falsely reporting about a murder if they were just getting their information from a press release from like a sheriff's office or the Minnesota State Police or something like that. I don't know, I kind of have some mixed feelings on that because you would think if you're the media and you're just reporting on what the sheriff's office is telling you, can you still be held liable in that
case?
Yeah,
it seems like a issue of the sheriff's office that you just shouldn't release that information.
Yeah, that would strike me as being the case too. So the Supreme Court recently ruled on this. By the way, they did rule in favor of the media company Care 11, but Kevin Featherly had a chance to sit in on these hearings. So he'll tell us more about this a little bit later on in the show. Yeah, as I was reading through more of the details, it just caught more and more of my interest because that would be really concerning. And I can understand why this guy wanted to actually sue Care 11 if you can think of the amount of damage that would do to your reputation if you get charged...
For the rest of your life, anytime anyone searches your name, they're going to see articles about how you were suspected of murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a mixed bag, too, because Care 11 is just reporting on what the sheriff's office is telling them.
Yeah, I don't really blame Care 11. They're reporting what they got from a press release.
Yeah, exactly. So Kevin has a lot more details that we'll talk about coming up in the second half of the show. Let's talk about some news that came out of the state legislature this week, though. So, out of the DFL-controlled Minnesota State House, we did get both of those bills regarding gun safety reform passed. The first one was the red flag bill, and that passed with only a few Democrats actually voting against the bill. There were five of them overall, and then in terms of universal background checks, six Democrats voted against it, but it still overall ended up passing the DFL-controlled House of Representatives. Very unlikely this will get passed in the Senate, being that it is very Republican-controlled. Well, not very. It's only a 35-32 majority. But most of the senators have shown no appetite for either the red flag law or the universal backgrounds checks. I still think they're going to try to pass some sort of compromise, which really isn't a compromise, which effectively just says enforce the laws that are on the books, really without providing any funding for it. That's at least the feeling I kind of got when they were holding these gun hearings in the Senate back in or up in Hibbing a few weeks ago. So we'll see what happens with that. But either way, we do have the red flag law and universal background checks both passed out of the DFL-controlled House with five defectors from the DFL on the red flag law and six defectors on the criminal backgrounds check. Also passed in the Minnesota State House of Representatives, they did pass the law that would require political parties that obtain data from the primary vote to keep that information private or risk penalties. As that move comes after lawmakers from both parties reported concerns about voter privacy and a potential chilling effect at the polls as Minnesotans worried about their partisan ballot they selected becoming public. So, just to recap, what happens if you vote in the primary on Tuesday? That would be Super Tuesday. All four of the major political parties in Minnesota, that would be the DFL, the Republicans, and both of the legalized cannabis parties, they don't get access in terms of who you specifically vote for in the primary. They just figure out what party you voted for in the primary. So they would say, oh, Eric Nelson voted in the primary, he took a DFL ballot. Brett Johnson voted in the DFL primary, he took a DFL ballot. Or Randy in Coon Rapids voted in the Republican primary, they would know that Randy selected a Republican ballot. Of course, a lot of people are very anxious about this, being that they work in professions where they don't necessarily want the public knowing about their partisan leanings. So that's why this bill has gotten passed through the State House of Representatives, which would increase the penalties for this information being disseminated in any unscrupulous way. So it does move on to the state Senate. And by the way, they're not going to hold any hearings on this until next Tuesday, which just happens to be the Super Tuesday election day. So I suppose they could retroactively pass the thing and then say after the fact, if one of the parties does disseminate the information, they could still face some sort of penalties. But yeah, I would actually rather have them try to get this thing taken care of before we actually head in to Super Tuesday. And in the state Senate, showing how important election security is to them, the Republican-controlled state Senate apparently this week has still been holding hearings on voter ID, something that we decided way back in 2012 when we voted down a constitutional amendment for voter ID. I have no idea why they're still wasting time on this, being that it has no chance of either being passed in the Democratic-controlled House or by DFL Governor Tim Walz. So a little bit of an update on what's been happening in the state legislature this week, and we'll have more on that coming up with Kevin in the second half of our show, right around 2:35. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about Amy Klobuchar coming to Minnesota this weekend and this weird dynamic she has in terms of how she pays some of her campaign workers or contracted workers. She actually has a lot of contracted workers that are doing a lot of her campaign work. We'll chat more about that coming up next here on FYI Politics.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I speak nationally and internationally on the subjects of entrepreneurship, trades reform, apprenticeship, craftsmanship, and coding science. I've created a rigorous apprenticeship program where I find, train, inspire, and mentor young people in my craft. The result is an ultra-professional crew of craftspeople that cares about their work and your project. We're not like other contractors. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com. That's NickSlavik.com to learn more.
AM 950 and the Devil's Advocates invite you to join us for a Super Tuesday Spectacular live election night broadcast at the Park Tavern in St. Louis Park. 7 to 11 p.m., the Devil's Advocates will broadcast their show along with 950 AM's own Matt McNeil and Brett Johnson with real-time results and local analysis. No admission charge. Everyone is welcome. Join us at the Park Tavern, 3401 Louisiana Ave, South St. Louis Park, Minnesota.
Taking prescription medication should not be a scary task. The staff at St. Paul Corner Drug makes certain you know everything about your prescription medication before you leave the pharmacy. Knowing what to expect and when and how to take your prescriptions gives you the confidence to safely take your medication and maintain good health. Should additional questions arise, we are here to help sort things out. St. Paul Corner Drug, pharmacy the way it should be, at stpaulcornerdrug.com.
February is the month of love. Hey, it's Brett from FYI Politics. And when's the last time you gave your carpet some love and attention? Not only is your carpet one of the biggest investments in your home, but it's also the biggest air filter. So breathe better this month and get three rooms zero-res clean starting at only $119. And because love has no limits, zero-res will throw in a free hallway cleaning and will take 10% off your entire bill if you get your air ducts and carpet cleaned together. But you have to mention AM 950 when you call. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit zeroresminnesota.com.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
When you need legal assistance, let the Minnesota Lawyer and Referral Information Service help you find the right attorney. It's a new and enhanced program of the Hennepin and Ramsey County Bar Associations. They have professional, experienced referral counselors who can connect you to vetted attorneys practicing in employment, real estate, wills, taxes, and much more. Take the stress out of finding a lawyer. Call 612-752-6699 or go to mnlawyerreferral.org. The right call for the right lawyer.
And we're back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. One more note for the legislature I forgot to pass along to you, and you probably heard about this too, but that Alex Smith emergency insulin funding bill was passed in the Minnesota House by a 75-52 margin, meaning there were a few Republicans, it looks like, that actually came on board with that. But the one note about that I found kind of interesting is that even if it were enacted by the state Senate and also signed by Governor Walz, the program wouldn't even launch until July 1st, which doesn't really do you a whole lot of good if you need emergency insulin funding. I don't know if you can quite be waiting until July 1st. So we have some new numbers in regards to who's been voting early in the Minnesota primary elections. And 26,000 more Democrats submitted votes in last week's primary than Republicans, which isn't a big surprise, being the Republicans don't have a competitive primary. But the numbers are only a quarter of what we had in terms of early voting as compared to 2016. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily because a lack of enthusiasm. I think the bigger reason is that people largely have not made up their minds yet in terms of who they're voting for in the primary. That's what I think the biggest cause is as to why our numbers are, what, 75% down as compared to 2016. I mean, when you remember back to 2016, most people had their minds made up already whether they were going to vote for Bernie or Hillary in the primary, compared to this year when lots of people are still undecided. And Amy Klobuchar, perhaps sensing that people are still undecided in Minnesota, is going to return to the state coming up on Sunday, as she'll be holding a rally in St. Louis Park at the high school. Doesn't say if it's going to be outdoors or in the gym. I would imagine it would probably be in the gym. Might be a little too cold to be outside. She has also picked up the endorsements of a number of prominent Democrats around the state, including Deb Calvert, who is a city council member from Minnetonka, Sandy Martin, who is the mayor of Shoreview, Bill Luther, former congressman, also Chris Tolbert, city council member from St. Paul, Shelley Carlson, city council member from Moorhead, and also Hubert Skip Humphrey III, former attorney general of Minnesota. And if I remember correctly, I think he was a candidate for governor back in 1998, the year Jesse Ventura won. Klobuchar is expected to campaign with Tina Smith, Representative Dean Phillips, Representative Angie Craig, as well as Dave Wellstone and others on a bus tour going around Minnesota this weekend. So I have some mixed feelings as to why she's campaigning in Minnesota. Polls released recently have shown that she does have a narrow lead over Bernie Sanders, but that would strike me as being kind of problematic if you have to campaign in your home district or your home state. So maybe she's just waiting to the last weekend to solidify any support. But
and it's like, yeah, it's the only place she's really viable at this point.
Yeah, there's really no other state where she's even close to leading.
Because Bernie's coming here on Monday.
Yep.
At the River Center. So, I mean, he must think it's he's in contention.
Yeah, and even if she wins Minnesota, I'm not sure that's really going to what help her in the long run. Yeah. I mean, she's polling maybe 10% in a few states, but that's still nowhere near
you need at
the
least
lead.
15 to get anything.
Yeah, and that depends on state to state, and some, yeah, it goes proportional, and that 10% is not going to help you a whole lot. And like you mentioned here in Minnesota, you need at least 15% of the vote to actually even have your delegates counted. And keep in mind, in Minnesota, we go by district in addition to statewide. So, yeah, like let's say Bernie Sanders does well in CD5, he could rack up a whole lot of delegates despite losing the statewide election, since we actually weight our delegate counts in terms of how many Democrats are in each congressional district. So, yeah, if someone like a Bernie Sanders racks up a huge margin in CD5, he could bring in a lot of delegates despite the fact that Amy Klobuchar might have won the statewide election. So that's something to watch, too, in terms of our Super Tuesday coverage, which, by the way, we'll be having here on AM 950. And you can watch us have our live broadcast over at the Park Tavern coming up next Tuesday. Fun gets underway at 7 o'clock as Dom and Crute from the Devil's Advocates radio show will be hosting our election night coverage over at the Park Tavern, although Matt and I will be contributing a little bit to the Devil's Advocates coverage, but encourage you to head over there to the Park Tavern for our Super Tuesday night coverage and live broadcast. It is a free event. No registration is required whatsoever. find more details over at am950radio.com. And one more thing about Amy Klobuchar before we head to break and get to our conversation with Kevin Featherly. So Gabe Schneider over at MinPost wrote this article about campaign workers, or maybe not necessarily campaign workers, for Amy Klobuchar. Here's why I phrase it this way. So Schneider writes that they wear Amy for America shirts, they staff events, and they even knock on doors asking you to donate to Klobuchar's campaign. But they're technically not volunteers, and they're not on Senator Amy Klobuchar's campaign staff payroll. So what exactly are they? Across Minnesota, if you talk to someone wearing one of those green Amy for American t-shirts over the past year, they might have been a contractor for Grassroots SG Company, or GRSG is the acronym, which is a consulting agency founded by veteran organizer Sean Gagan, whoever that guy is. So while campaigns often have canvassers, it's uncommon for a late-stage presidential candidate, like Amy Klobuchar, especially someone who's a senator and well-known like her, to hire outside consultants in their home state when they can usually turn to their own already built-up volunteer network in their base. And Michael Bloomberg is the only other candidate who spent anywhere near the amount of money that Klobuchar has spent on this consulting agency to have campaign workers for Amy Klobuchar. In fact, she spent a little over $1 million on GRSG, who has brought out different people to work for Klobuchar's campaign. And contractors, canvassers wore Amy for America's t-shirts, and it's unclear if they actually get the same health insurance benefits that the field staff has access to, which are part of a union. So, yeah, I'm not sure necessarily what to make of that, if she's just hiring or going through GRSG to get more workers on a consistent basis, but I'm not sure that's the best look either, especially considering that people who are technically on her payroll are part of a union and get health insurance benefits, while it's unclear whether these contractors are paid the same amount or are entitled to the same benefits. All right, we're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We will have some time for some phone calls during the last segment of the show, so you might want to hold off until about 2:55 or so. But coming up next, we are going to be speaking to Kevin Featherly of Min Lawyer about some topics that have been taking place at the state legislature, also some pretty scathing reports that have been issued by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and then the Supreme Court case that talks about whether you can sue a media company for taking a press conference of a sheriff that falsely accused you of a crime. We'll have more detail on that coming up next.
This is Artbeat for the week. I'm Elizabeth Horub, co-host of Connections Radio Show, and today I'll be letting you in on a few fantastic arts events you're going to want to attend in the Twin Cities area this weekend. Tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Strike Theater, catch Mental Health Happy Hour. It's okay to not be okay. It's even better to do it together. The Mental Health Happy Hour is a Strike Theater storytelling show. They hope to build common ground and growth by using comedy to share stories. We're invited to laugh together as they dive into difficult topics. The show will be full of stories and a talkback at the end. Tickets are $10. Go to strike.theater to learn more about Mental Health Happy Hour. Also tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Minsky Theater, catch Minsky's Open Spotlight. It's like an open mic night, but for all manner of glorious entertainment. General admission is $20 at the door. Go to www.minsky.com to learn more about their open spotlight. And finally, this Saturday at 9:30 p.m. at Bryant Lake Bowl, stop by to catch the February Sci-Fi Reading Hour. New science fiction from local luminary Cole Serrar and special guest Duck Washington, underscored with futuristic music by Dissociate. Come hear futures you never imagined with local talents, be transported to places you've never been, see yourself and your world in a new way, and be transformed. Doors and music are at 9:30 p.m. Reading begins at 10 p.m. Go to bryantlakebowl.com to learn more about the Sci-Fi Reading Hour. That's Artbeat for the week. I'm Elizabeth Horub, co-host of Connections Radio Show, airing live Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
You can't go through a day without hearing about healthcare reform. St. Paul Corner Drug is here to help you navigate the ever-changing healthcare landscape. We are your advocate in getting much-needed prescription medication covered under your insurance plan. Need to choose a different plan? There is no reason to feel like you are drowning in the system. St. Paul Corner Drug can make simple work out of finding you a plan that best suits your needs. You can rest assured at St. Paul Corner Drug, pharmacy the way it should be.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today will be mostly sunny with a high of 26, and tonight, a low around 15. Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 42 and a low of 30. Sunday, partly sunny with a high of 45 and a low of 30. Monday will be cloudy with a high of 36 and a low of 22.
Most Tax Service has been working for you, not the IRS, since 1971. Located in Highland Park in St. Paul, they offer a variety of services, including payroll, business or personal taxes, and audit representation. Check them out at mohstax.com.
And welcome back to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. It's a Friday afternoon. And right now, we're going to visit with Kevin Featherly, who is the Capitol writer for Min Lawyer, as we're going to talk about a number of topics, including a couple of reports that were recently issued by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, because they took a couple of agencies to Minnesota to task for, well, not exactly doing things in a good way. So, Kevin, welcome to the program. Glad to have you back on the airwaves.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so let's talk about this report that the OLA, or Office of Legislative Auditor, just issued in regards to the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. They basically said that the Department of Human Rights has not been conducting timely discrimination investigations. So can you tell us a little bit more about what they issued in their report?
It's basically what you just said, and it turns out that's not a new story. The Human Rights Department has been audited, I guess, three times over the last 30 years, and apparently each of those reports have had similar conclusions. And, you know, digging a little deeper into what this particular report says, and by the way, this was reviewing information from the Human Rights Department between fiscal years 16 through 18. So that would have been the last administration, the Dayton administration's Human Rights Department. It's now a different department under Commissioner Lucero. But what they're saying is that, you know, in recent years, it hasn't met timeliness requirements that are outlined in law to investigate and complete cases, complaints of discrimination. The lack of timely investigations is making it harder to conduct effective investigations, and negative that hurts people. The lawyers out there have complained, the people who are representing the respondents, that they're not hearing from the investigators for long periods of time, that they don't know what's going on with these cases. And, you know, it's just really what it comes down to is that the Human Rights Department, if they listen to what the auditor is suggesting, is going to have to be a little more discriminating in terms of, and forgive the pun there, in terms of the cases that they pursue. Because as things have stood up to the beginning of 2019, at least, they really weren't putting a whole lot of thought into what to prioritize. They've sort of treated every case, even those that, you know, might not have any particular merit, treating them all with the same level of priority. And the legislative auditor is suggesting that because they are an agency that lacks resources, and they're, you know, if they want to change that, they'll have to go to the legislature. But as things stand, with the resources they have, they're probably going to have to, you know, look a little more carefully at the cases that they actually pursue. Now, that's going to be a very difficult thing for Commissioner Lucero herself. She doesn't, you know, as she said today at the hearing, you know, how am I going to tell people that I'm no longer going to pursue age discrimination cases? And she used that as just a for example. I don't think she intends to stop doing that. But Representative Bernardi was on the audit commission that was hearing this report and was putting the pressure on pretty strongly not to do that kind of prioritization, to look at every case, not to ignore any case of discrimination. So, you know, they're kind of in a tough spot. There's pressure. They're being torn in two directions, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure the argument they're making is that, well, if we had more funding, then we actually could go through and give each case the proper care it needs. And, yeah, it sounds like they ultimately have to make that decision of whether they're going to continue taking cases and not necessarily giving them the attention they need, or, as the auditor is recommending, yeah, you do have to be, well, as you said, you have to decide at a pretty high level which cases are actually being are going to be worth to pursue.
Right, and well, yeah, it was almost as though you were there. Yes, they certainly did argue for more resources. But there's another point to be made, too, that the auditor made, and that is that the Human Rights Department has to prioritize the cases that it investigates by law. That's in statute. Now, the statute isn't particularly instructive, and that's one of the things that the auditor also pointed out, that the legislature may need to take a look at some of the statutory language and see if maybe they can provide a little more guidance. They also suggested that the Human Rights Act itself is a little bit vague on some of these points, and that might also need to be revisited. But really, when it comes down to it, they're probably, if they're going to listen to this advice, they're going to have to pick and choose and put their attention on the cases that really need the focus.
Well, let's move on to another report that the OLA just issued, and this has to do with the Minnesota Department of Corrections, where they say they need to improve their data gathering practices for the safety and welfare of prisoners and staffs, of the staff as well. And the report out today says that the DOC's data on violent events in state prisons are inconsistent and incomplete. And I even remember, Kevin, reading about this in City Pages a couple of days ago, where they were reporting how there's female staff members that are having male prisoners expose themselves to them. And yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of problems there in terms of how they're dealing with these problems, either being reported or not reported.
Yeah, and I'm glad you focused there, because that was sort of stunning. And it was stunning partly because that's not information that the auditor got by collecting and analyzing the information supplied by DOC. Hmm. The reports about the sexual misconduct and the sexual harassment that the 1,400 or so, I don't know if it's all of them, but there are 1,400 women working within the prisons. The misconduct and the sexual harassment they're facing is rampant to the degree that supervisors have suggested that they need to just sort of learn to deal with male prisoners masturbating in front of them. And one of the things that came out of this study, and this was done, again, this is the OLA just having these conversations. This is not something that came out of the reporting, because the reporting that's done at Corrections lumps those kinds of issues into sort of just a general category of abuse. So, for instance, if they are getting catcalls, if they're being sexually harassed, if they're being instructed in exactly what the prisoner would like to do them if they could get out and get their hands on them, that just kind of falls under, you know, general harassment. But that category also covers when a prisoner cusses at a guard. Mm-hmm. And the sexual misconduct falls under a category of sexual behavior and isn't highlighted in any reports. And so sexual behavior issues, which are a level one offense, the lowest level offense, when there's this kind of misconduct where somebody is actually masturbating in front or doing something else that's equally egregious, that just falls into the category under level one sexual behavior, which also includes consensual sex between prisoners. And so the OLA could not see this in the data. They only learned of it through their own examination and their own conversations.
Really? Okay. So what else?
And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the lack of data collection. You know, data collection sounds boring, but in this case, it means, you know, having the information that they can analyze and really do system analysis so that they can make that place safer and you know, relieve not just women, but coworkers. The other part of the report that I don't want to miss out on touching on is that there's rampant bullying going on, abuse between staffers. And that's something that's particularly, according to the report, rampant in the Oak Park Heights facility. And there's a horrifying story in the report talking about how one particular guard was alone on a living unit when an emergency took place, and that guard, I don't know if it was a male or female, it's not stated, called for backup. The guard was refused help from the on-duty emergency response team because there was perception that that stranded guard on that living unit alone with perhaps rebelling, perhaps fighting prisoners, that guard had at some point filed a complaint against one of the other staffers.
Wow.
That's the kind of stuff we're hearing here.
Wow, that is a pretty unbelievable problem, and I'm not even sure a report can even solve that problem. I mean, if you're the OLA, what do you even recommend to in terms of trying to improve these conditions? This sounds like it's a big structural problem they have with the Department of Corrections.
Well, and there's some confusion about that. I mean, what does it mean? They want real-time data collection. Well, you know, when I think of that, I think of a nurse walking around with a laptop on a cart and a handheld device checking boxes as, you know, things go on. Well, can you imagine trying to put that in the hands of a prison guard? It just is unworkable.
Right.
But they're talking about perhaps things like audio capture, maybe some things like that that could perhaps do voice recognition. I mean, there's ways to do it. And as Carlos Mariani pointed out, that this kind of thing has been dealt with in the private sector, you know, this kind of data collection. But we're talking banking and we're talking healthcare. It's just such a different environment. The OLA really didn't, at least in the report, doesn't really give a whole lot of indication of how they think this could take place. But they do believe it has to take place in order to make the places safer.
Yeah, it sounds like something needs to happen there. I'm not sure if they can look to see what other states have done or what else you can try to do with this. I know reading through partially or part of the report, it sounds like a lot of these prisons are very understaffed with workers that are also being overworked. So that probably has to contribute to some of the problems too. When people are not getting paid very much or they're working overtime or you're short staffed, that certainly has to be a big contributing factor too.
Yeah, let me zone in on that just a minute. The idea of they've quadrupled forced and voluntary overtime, if there really is a distinction to be made there. You need to work. Quadrupled that amount of overtime since 2013. And they're, nonetheless, they've lost a lot of people through retirements and turnover. And so what's happened because of staffing shortages, when you don't have staff, then you have to have staffers accompany somebody to an education program. You have to have staffers accompany somebody to meals. You have to have them accompanied to visits by relatives. You have to have them accompanied if they're going to go to work. And if that staff is short, if they don't have people to help to do those things, to accompany them to these different programs and treatment and all the other things that everybody agrees is needed in order to get these folks rehabilitated and reintegrated back into the community, what you wind up with is people cooped up in their cells with nothing to do, just seething. And, you know, I'll tell you this, and this is maybe a little extreme. I hope it's not. But just reading this and knowing what little I know about the prisons, I must tell you, at this point, I would not be shocked if at some point at somewhere in Minnesota's prisons we have something akin to an Attica State riot. Because what we're having are people who are trapped in these cells and they have little to do. The programming isn't there. They're not being visited. It's just the makings of a disaster.
Oh, I mean, for sure. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a prisoner, whether you're a guilty person, innocent person, or what crime you committed. Yeah, if you're just cooped up in a cell all day with nothing to do, with no visitors, yeah, that's going to have a major psychological impact on you where you're not going to be making good decisions.
And that's also going to do another dynamic. It's going to make it difficult for the staff to forge the one-on-one personal relationships that everybody else agrees is necessary, because these are the people that do interact with these folks. If things work right, these prison guards kind of turn into mentors. They become confidants. You know, they become trusted people. But if they can't develop those relationships because, you know, there aren't enough people to even make that possible, it's just another contributing factor to this sort of pressure cooker that I'm afraid is really building inside Minnesota's prisons right now.
Yeah, even though you said it's kind of extreme, it's as we're talking with you here, it's hard to disagree with your assessment of what could possibly happen in the future. And yeah, it's kind of depressing to think about. I only got a couple minutes left here, Kevin, but I do briefly want to touch on this Supreme Court case that we at least were talking about earlier in the show, where in a 5-2 ruling, more than a year after oral arguments, the state Supreme Court ruled in the Ryan versus Gannett case that the fair and accurate reporting privilege protects news reports of info disseminated by law enforcement in press conferences or in press releases. And this stems from a 2012 shooting in Cold Spring, where there was a guy named Ryan Larson who was arrested in connection with the murder. And then the sheriff's office and the Minnesota Department of Public Safety were issuing press releases and having press conferences that were being reported on by outlets like Care 11. And then it was later determined that Larson was completely innocent in this murder, and he went back and sued Care 11, saying, hey, you damaged my reputation by reporting on this. And I'm sure Care 11 is saying, well, we were just reporting on what we were hearing from the sheriff's office and the Department of Public Safety. So today it sounds like the court did rule in favor of Care 11 and the Gannett media agency, saying that, no, you're okay if you're reporting what a sheriff's office is saying and so on. Do I have that kind of summarized, Kevin, or do you want to tweak that a little bit?
I'd tweak it in this way, in that it's a ruling that kind of gave both sides a little bit of something. And I can tell you that media lawyers are a little worried about this decision in some ways.
Really? Okay.
Because they, yeah, because, I mean, everything you said is correct. The court said that privilege exists for these kinds of dissemination. You know, basically what the court is saying is if the press is just relaying information that substitutes for what somebody would have heard had they been there, all to the good. And these are public hearings, these are public meetings, all to the good. But the court also overruled the Court of Appeals. The Supreme Court overruled the Court of Appeals by sending this back on remand to the district court. So this is going to continue. And now the lower court's going to have to figure out whether privilege was defeated by certain statements that came out in those reports, you know, that the jury had already found were false. But the problem, according to the court, is that the jury wasn't instructed on how to evaluate whether the reporting was inaccurate, and thereby the privilege was defeated. So if that sounds confusing, that's because it kind of is. And yeah, what the media lawyers are saying, have told our newspaper, is that, you know, they're a little worried that, you know, this sort of creates a roadmap for plaintiffs. You know, it's sort of like Mark Anfinson sold our paper that the core of the privilege is the importance of getting, meaning the fair report privilege, the right to report accurately that which you hear at these, for instance, law enforcement press conferences. The core of that privilege is just getting information to the public, and the majority's opinion makes applying that privilege more complex. You know, in effect, juries are sort of invited to become editors, and that hadn't been there before. So, you know, this is it's a good ruling from the vantage point of the press, and that we can continue to do what we're doing. But that they've made clear that privilege does not apply if a jury can be persuaded that the reporting was not fair.
Oh, that would be very concerning. Yeah, if you're sitting out there and you're reporting on what's happening at a press conference, you would be kind of nervous to report anything other than word for word whatever a law enforcement official is saying, for that very reason being that, yeah, if a jury says, well, you're kind of tampering with what the words are, yeah, you could be in some trouble legally.
Yeah, and I mean, it would put, sort of put the press to some degree in the position of having to make sort of ad hoc determinations about, you know, what to omit and, you know, what's mm-hmm. what's fair, you know, what's of sufficient public concern. And that's kind of hard to do in a live broadcast.
Yeah, most certainly. So, yeah, as you said, this is going to go back to the appellate courts in some regards, but the larger issue with the Supreme Court has already been ruled on, so this thing is still far from over, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to keep on going, and, you know, I imagine some of it's going to depend on the instructions that are given to the jury. But, I mean, I think overall, from the press's vantage point, it's good news because, you know, we're not going to be held to the standard of trying to prove the veracity of everything law enforcement tells us in that setting. I mean, as you know, a lot of times in the course of an investigation, that information is held very close. The press doesn't have access to it because it's considered part of the investigation. And in that instance, you know, we have no choice but to rely on law enforcement. For better or worse, mm-hmm. it's our only way of getting information to the public.
Yeah, it's a tough case because I get the vantage point of Larson, who, yeah, was falsely accused
Me
of a
too.
Murder, and then, yeah, he's getting his reputation damaged because, as Eric, our producer, was bringing up, I mean, yeah, if you Googles that guy's name, you're probably going to run into some of those Care 11 articles saying that he was originally charged with murder, and that can certainly be damaging to his reputation, but, yeah, that
yeah.
would certainly
and
be
a big... And it's a weird case because the law enforcement was called to the scene where the police officer was killed, and they wanted to check on his welfare,
mm-hmm.
but it was somebody else who actually did the homicide.
Wow, we'll have to see how that ends up working its way through the appellate courts. Hey, Kevin, we are unfortunately out of time, but really appreciate you joining me on the program. We've been speaking with Kevin Featherly, who is the Capitol reporter from MinLawyer. Find more of his work over at MinLawyer.com or follow him on Twitter at Kevin Featherly. Kevin, as always, appreciate the time today.
Thank you.
All right, we'll have to catch up with you another time. Stay tuned, we got one quick segment left on FYI Politics.
With the warmer weather coming, it's time to get that new Toyota vehicle you've wanted at Rudy Luther Toyota. Everyone loves the RAV4, and Rudy Luther has both the hot-selling 2020 RAV4 and the wildly popular RAV4 Hybrid. Both have inspiring design, intuitive technology, and smart style, and Rudy Luther has 250 available. And test drive the completely redesigned Highlander. Discover more quality for family time with the refined interior and the striking exterior. Stop by Rudy Luther Toyota today, 5 miles west of downtown Minneapolis on 394.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. I'm a better neighbor because my service has taught me how important it is to be a team player. My training helps me in my classes when I give attention to detail to the task at hand. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed. Also, the Army National Guard's education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
And we're back for the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Dow Jones now down 602 points, but like I mentioned earlier in the show, let's see how it actually closes out by the end of the day, because yesterday it looked like it was only going to be down a few hundred points, but then lo and behold, just minutes before the close, it ended up dropping by a whopping 1,100 points. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, it tripled, didn't it? Because it was around like 400 when I saw
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it looked like, all right, it's going to be a modest loss.
Out of nowhere, 1,100.
Yeah, I was stunned when I heard that newscast, so it's going to be interesting to see if that happens again today. So stay tuned there for the top of the hour news once we have those markets in New York officially closed. All right, if you're a fan of Surly Darkness, bad news for you, as they are not going to be doing our 2020 Darkness Day. This is because, well, they've typically done this in the past in Wisconsin because Minnesota has a law that prohibits large breweries, those that make more than 20,000 barrels a year, from selling 64-ounce growlers filled in their tap rooms. Surly wanted to bring it back to Minnesota, but since they are above that threshold, they are not allowed to. And they decided they are not going to do it in Wisconsin either. So, yeah, if you're you're a fan of that Imperial Stout, you're kind of out of luck this year. I had it a few times. It was always really good stuff. But
Darkness Days is a blast, too, so I'm bummed they're not doing that.
Yeah, not doing it at all this year. So they're probably doing this as a move to have their customers pressure lawmakers to make a change on that since, well, they were successful in doing so in terms of Sunday liquor laws. But, yeah, if you're a fan of those Surly Darkness Days, not going to be happening this year. All right, this is Brent Johnson signing off for the end of the week. Stay tuned. We got Matt McNeil coming up next.
Hi, I'm Scott Peterson with the Minnesota News Network, inviting you to join us for Minnesota Matters, a weekly program covering everything that matters in the North Star State. This week, the latest from the state capitol, Minnesota's response.